Hello and welcome back to the History of Video Games. My name is Ben and I'm joined by the one and only Wes. How are you doing today, Wes?
I am doing great, Ben. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm chilling. It's been a good week. I don't know about you. Been playing some games. I can't wait to talk to you about them, but you want to get us started? What have you been up to?
Sure, yeah. So I've still been mainly playing Oblivion Remastered, if I'm being honest, but I did start a new co-op game with some of my friends a couple weeks ago that I'm going to talk about called Forever Skies.
Forever Sky? I don't think I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's a real interesting one. It's on Steam. I had it followed for a long time while it was in early access, but it hit 1.0 release and went on sale, so I picked it up and convinced my friends to buy it as well. But I didn't see the similarities at first, but once I watched like a review of the 1.0 release, it's really kind of a Subnautica type game. Like, you're in this alien environment and it's a survival sort of game, but it has very similar vibes to how Subnautica handles survival crafting and food systems and stuff like that. This one, though, instead of your alien environment being an ocean alien world and you're trapped underwater most of the time, this kind of takes it and flips it 180 degrees. Humans are like a spacefaring species at this point, and humans come back to Earth after Earth has been completely taken over by like insects and viruses and things like that and has been abandoned. But now humanity's suffering from a plague, which also, you know, suffering from a disease is the main plot point of Subnautica as well. But now you're suffering from a plague. They send you down to Earth to pick up where the previous research teams left off in trying to solve, figure out this disease. So,
okay.
It is sandboxy and you can play it co-op, which is really nice, but there is a story and there's kind of like you tech up through the game by following the story beats. But the really fun part of it, the hook that grabbed me, is that going back to Earth, like the bottom layer of the atmosphere or whatever, or just, you know, covering the ground for a couple hundred feet, is just like this thick gas that you can't breathe. So you traverse by flying an airship from the top of skyscraper to another top of skyscraper and scavenging as you go. So it's a really neat world. You've got like these giant bug monsters. The way that you get food is you fish off of your airship, but you're basically fishing into the sky and catching giant moths to cook up to eat. So just everything about the world is really interesting and weird, and it does a great job of, you know, they say this is Earth, like a futuristic Earth that's been abandoned, but it feels very alien. And we haven't got to the point yet, but eventually you can, you know, get protective gear so you can go onto the surface and actually fight in sort of like a first person shooter kind of aspect. I think like Subnautica, it's probably, you know, it's not really designed to be a first person shooter first and foremost. So that's not going to be its best element. Survival crafting is. But I love that you can do that. And another great comparison I've seen people make is that in tons of almost all survival games, you have to explore, scavenge, carry things back to your base, improve your base, and then go out and explore again. But in this one, the airship that you're building, you just keep expanding, and that is your whole base. All your machines, all your research equipment, everything that you use to get food and water is on the airship. So your base is always flying around with you, and you land on these skyscrapers, explore a little bit, and then take your base with you to the next location. So it's nice because it doesn't feel like there's as much running back and forth to deposit materials, clear your inventory. Like, you're always right next to your base. But yeah, we haven't gotten too far into it yet. We've, you know, got a couple modifications on our airship so it can go into the higher altitudes and we can get to taller skyscrapers. And we've got a mission to go down and find a way to the surface of the planet. But so far, it's really cool. Neat vibes, tons of cool plants, monsters, insects, and stuff going on. So I highly recommend it. And the co-op works great, too.
Hey, cool. Nice. Well, that sounds pretty fun. I might check that out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We can get you on our crew. We got room.
Okay. And I feel like I haven't played one of these survival games in a long time. I don't know if they're just not in the Humble Bundle or something.
Yeah, maybe. Give it a few years and hopefully some of them will pop in there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know you've got some stuff, I think, still a little bit of the backlog to talk about, right? So what do you got for us today?
Yeah, I do. I've got a pretty big one here today, Wes. A game that I got off of Amazon Prime's like free game section.
Right, yeah.
And somehow I've collected the entire trilogy of this game off of Amazon Prime for free. But I played Mafia the Definitive Edition.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, which is like the remake of the original Mafia game. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, it feels very old school, right? I think the remake pretty much just made everything look better, you know?
Right.
I don't think they changed that much as far as gameplay goes, because it really feels like a game made in the early 2000s in that, like, it's an open world game, but there's no, like, busy work, and there's no really free roam at all in the game. There is, like, a free roam mode, but as if you're playing the story mode, it's pretty much like, imagine you're at, like, the mafia base or whatever, and they tell you to do a mission. You go out into town, you do the mission, you come back, and then the next mission starts, and you can just keep doing that for, like, 20 hours or something. So it's kind of weird because it's like an open world game and it reminds me a lot of GTA, obviously. I mean, you're a bad guy in the mafia doing stuff.
Right, right.
And the game plays a third person shooter with a lot of driving in between the missions. So, you know, it has those vibes, but at the same time, it doesn't, because there's no like free roam. It's just like just the story missions of a GTA 5, which I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's the strongest part of GTA, you know, the story missions necessarily. Like, it's good, but I would have liked to spend some time in the world. I think it's a beautifully rendered world, and like the vibe of it is super cool. It's like 1930s gangster Chicago, and like all the radio stations on the car are like jazz, which I love. And
oh yeah, yeah.
I don't know, it just kind of puts you in that vibe, which is really cool. I love the way the cars drive; they're very heavy feeling, and they don't go very fast. Really, like the fastest you go is like 80 miles an hour, but if you go 80 miles an hour in one of these cars, you can't just stop and turn. Like, you're in like a heavy, you know, brick flying down the road, so you have to be careful. It does mean you get some crazy good drifts going, so I thought the driving was really fun. The gameplay was just like generic third person shooting. Didn't think it was all that strong, but because there is no free mode, you know, just walking around, and it's just story missions back to back to back, the story is crazy in depth and has so many characters that you meet and so many cutscenes, and it's like a big part of the game. Like, that is the game. It's like the story, and the story's great. The Definitive Edition apparently had all new English voicing, like recast.
Oh, wow.
So the voice acting was like amazing. Really, really good. The score is obviously good. All the cutscenes that they had were amazing. Took you to some great locations. And had a pretty good variety in terms of the gameplay. I thought, like, there are some missions where you had no weapons and you just would beat up people with clubs. There were some missions that were stealth, you know, that I had to do. There was a lot of like driving, getting away type missions. There was like a racing mission, which was interesting. Racing like these 1930s derby cars, which was kind of cool. So the overall story was really great. And actually, I like the story so much, I was like, I wonder what else this, you know, this team has done. The game's by Hangar 13. They've only really made Mafia games, pretty much. But the actual, like, lead designer for Mafia 1 is a guy named Daniel Vavra. He did Mafia 1 and 2, I think a little bit of Mafia 3 before he left, and then he did Kingdom Come Deliverance. So,
oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, so he's like, he knows what he's doing, you know? So I was really interested to see one of his early works here. And the story is really good. It is a little, like, I don't know. I feel like I watch a fair amount of, like, mafia movies, and they're all kind of play out the same, right, in some ways. Yeah. And, you know, this is very much along the same lines, but it was just cool to kind of be in that world. There were times where, I don't know, it feels like there were times when I was really deeply interested in the world and times where it kind of took me out of it. So, for example, I was driving one time, and on the rate, it, like, since it's all like driving to the next story location, since there's no free roam, they know about how long that will take, and they'll play like story related dialogue as you're driving. But one time it was just like the news radio cast of like a U.S. Zeppelin that had crashed. It was like the newscast, and I genuinely couldn't tell if it was something they had made up or if it was a real life thing. It apparently was a real life thing, which I looked up later. But like stuff like that kind of just really put me in the world, and I was like, oh, that's so cool that I could hear about that. But then there's other things where I'm like, I don't know, this, the game feels kind of weird. Like the whole city's like incredibly clean feeling, like, I don't know, Upper Manhattan in modern day or something. Like I felt like this is supposed to be the Depression. Shouldn't like all these houses be boarded up or something? Like, why are the streets look so clean? Where's the homeless people? I don't know. To me, apparently, I looked it up later, but apparently the car had kind of was popular at that point, but it still felt weird that there weren't like horses walking around, because it was placed in like in that time period where I thought you could easily put horses in and it would feel at home still. I don't know. So there were some parts about it that didn't feel realistic to me, but it was still really cool to experience.
Nice.
And the world is absolutely huge and takes you to some all like a whole bunch of really cool locations. There was a level where you fought on a steamboat. That was cool. Overall, I really enjoyed it. Maybe some minor nitpicks here and there, but really good one. I'm definitely looking forward to Mafia 2, which I don't know if that's supposed to be better than the first one. I have to imagine it is, but I've only really heard good things about the whole series.
Well, and I can confirm that Mafia 2 has free roam, as far as I know, because that when I didn't have GTA and there was a free demo for Mafia 2 on Steam, I used to play that so much with my friends in like high school. And it was funny because the demo was only a 20-minute timed gameplay, but you could just restart it. So it was like 20 minutes, you lose all your progress, and then you just start over and you get another 20 minutes. So
yeah,
it was the weirdest thing. But I loved that little demo, just, you know, GTA style wreaking mayhem, except you're like a old school mafia guy.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, I quite liked it. It's just different, right? A bit of an older style game with sometimes it felt like almost pointless that it was an open world, though. I was like, this would have been better if it was just a linear game
right,
in a lot of ways, I think. But it was cool. I enjoyed it.
Nice. All right. Glad you had a good time with that one. That's a big one down.
Yeah.
All right. But why don't we switch over and talk about our special topic for today? We've got more hardware that we're talking about.
More, you say?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, yet another piece of hardware we're looking at. This one I'm really excited for. It is the Vectrex home console. The Vectrex is a vector graphics home console. The first ever, right? So
I think the first only.
Yeah, it might be the first and only, yeah. Which I don't think necessarily means that this is a bad idea, but maybe it wasn't super marketable. We'll have to see as the years of its life go on. But the idea for this vector graphics home console was thought up by a guy named John Ross at Smith Engineering after he was apparently like at a store and he found this 1-inch cathode ray tube and wondered if he could make a game with it. So originally, since they had that very, very tiny cathode ray tube, they were planning to make it kind of like a handheld size device. But after talking to some developers and trying to get somebody to like pick it up, they landed on the idea of a tabletop console. It's kind of like those Minicade series we've seen where it's got a screen built into it and it sits on a table, but it is a home console basically.
But it's not big enough to like sit on the floor, right?
No, because the screen itself is only like 9 inches, and that's most of the console is the screen. It's also like a vertical orientation rectangle, so it's a little strange for the screen. Like, it's not horizontal, it's not widescreen. But yeah, it just sits kind of tall, and you'd have to be like laying on your stomach to play it on the floor, I guess. But they ended up licensing the product with General Consumer Electronics, and it was released to a bunch of test markets at the end of 1982 before it ended up releasing more widely across the US and Europe in 1983. But that's why we're covering it now in November of 1982. After it came out, initially it did fairly well, so Milton Bradley took notice of it and actually bought it up later in 1983 from a General Consumer Electronics, and they became the main publisher for it, or a producer. The Vectrex, though, it's an interesting console. As I said, it's got a 9-inch vertical screen. It had a slot for the controller on the bottom, which, like, the controller, the back would face out, and it actually kind of just looked like the bottom of the TV when you slid it in there, which is pretty neat. Then there was a cartridge port on the side for games, and it was advertised as the only console to come with its own screen, which I believe is true if you're not counting handhelds, you know? So,
yeah.
In the commercials for it, they show, you know, it was apparently very light. They showed that there's a handle on the back. You could just pick it up, plug it in somewhere, take out the controller, and you're good to go to play wherever you are, which is pretty cool. The controller reminds me of like a super wide NES controller, I think. Like, it's just this big rectangle. It's got a joystick on the left, and then it's got four buttons in a horizontal line on the right. It only came with one controller, but apparently there were two plugs, so you could buy a second controller to play some two-player games on it. And the Vectrex itself, we're not going to talk too much about the stats because, you know, comparing it to other consoles, when this is a Vector graphics-specific console, it's not going to be a direct comparison, really. But yeah. I will say that it had 8 kilobytes of ROM, and it had a Motorola 68A09 chip. Most of the ROM that it used came from the cartridges that plugged into it that could store 32 kilobytes of ROM. It also had a dedicated sound chip, so it's nice to know we're going to be getting crisp Vector graphics and sounds on this console. The built-in screen was unfortunately only able to display black and white, but harkening back to the Odyssey days, the games came with overlays, colored overlays that you could slot into it. It had these little tabs a little bit in front of the screen, so the overlay didn't actually stick directly on the screen. It was maybe like half an inch removed from it, which kind of gave a weird 3D effect on its own. But then the bright white display of the Vector graphics would shine through it, and it would look like a different color for whatever the overlay was. It did have a built-in game with it, too, called Mindstorm, which was basically Asteroids, but that had like a blue-tinted overlay, and it was pretty nice how it made the lights look different. They also ended up selling some crazy peripherals for the Vectrex. One was a pair of glasses, or like goggles, really. It was like this huge thing you put on your head, almost like modern VR, that simulated a 3D effect when you looked at the screen by like showing... I forget how it did it. Like, it had something that moved back and forth in front of your eyes, but then it also displayed like three different colors to make it look 3D. It seems like it was super trippy. And then they also had a light pen that you could get as a peripheral to draw on the screen for, I think there must have been a certain game where you could draw on the screen and have it respond. With all of these cool features, minus the peripherals, it originally sold at a price of $199, which today is about $660. Definitely a little pricey, but I think it's in line with a lot of other second generation consoles that we've seen. And it is coming with its own screen. So I think, you know, the fact that it has its own Vector graphics screen built in, probably worth some of the extra price there. People say that it has to be seen in person to be truly appreciated. So definitely on the bucket list, I think probably for both of us. But we'll take what we can get. We've got some games to talk about today for it. So yeah, Ben, what do you think about the Vectrex?
It's really cool. I'm really excited to check out some of these games.
All right. Well, then let's not wait any longer. Why don't we take a quick little break and then hop into our timeline? Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Let's hop into our timeline for today. Before we get started off with some Vectrex games, we wanted to mention that we're only going to be doing three reviews today. I did one and Ben did two because we've got a lot of awesome honorable mentions to talk about in a lot of Actrex games. So we wanted to make sure we could pack in as much good stuff as we could. But starting off with some Vectrex games, we have Mindstorm, which I mentioned is the built-in game for this that came on the console. It's basically like Asteroids, except the ship flew by, dropped a bunch of mines in random places on the screen, and then the mines would grow bigger and float around like asteroids. So just slightly different. But then there was also a lot of arcade ports on this, one of them being Berserk, which is just straight up Berserk. I mean, you even have Evil Otto. I feel like it moves maybe a little bit slower than the original Berserk, but it did look pretty cool.
All right. And then we're going to move into my first review of the day, of course, with a brand new home console, especially the only vector graphics console ever made, I think. We had to take a look at least one game.
Oh, yeah.
And the one we chose is my first review of the day. It is Scramble on the Vectrex. We have covered Scramble on the arcade systems way back, I think at the beginning of 81, I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Scramble came out, so it's been out for a while now. If you're not familiar with Scramble, it kind of plays like a sideways Galaxian, maybe, where you're on the left side of the screen, flying to the right. The screen is kind of scrolling by from right to left, and your main objective really is to shoot the ships that are kind of coming in front of you or from below you. To do that, you have a shot that shoots directly straight forward, which is kind of from left to right, just like in a normal Galaxian game, but you also have a bomb button where you can throw these bombs down towards the ground and they kind of arc downwards, and you can blow up stuff like enemy ships on the ground before they take off. But you can also use that to blow up these fuel canisters, and there is a kind of countdown timer, which is themed as a fuel level in this, and if you don't blow up those fuel canisters, you will not get any fuel back. I don't know how blowing up a fuel canister gives you fuel, but that's how it works. The game has a couple different stages, I guess. The first section is kind of like ground underneath of you, airplanes coming at you from the side and from below. But then you kind of seamlessly transition into the second type of environment, which is more of like a cave, where now you've got a ceiling above you too, so you can't just move up high. You're kind of a little bit more confined. But otherwise, it's pretty much the same. I think that you've got more or less a third stage where you're still bombing stuff on the ground, but instead of like ships coming at you from the side, they're like unhittable asteroids, I guess. So you have to dodge them. There is no shooting them. And I think there's also a stage where it's more based around like the cave gets incredibly tight. There's not a whole lot of shooting happening, but it's more just maneuvering and kind of navigating these tight corridors without hitting the edges. I think that's all the stages. I don't think I ever saw somebody like win per se. So I don't know if it goes forever, if there's an ending. I also couldn't, you know, I died pretty quick on this. So I'm not totally sure about that, but that's the general gameplay. It plays the same as Scramble, essentially. So because of that, I'm going to talk mostly about the non-gameplay aspects, like the graphics and the sound, because that's what's really different here. The original Scramble was a raster graphics game, not vector graphics, so how does it look like on vector graphics? Well, it's a little bit of a mixed bag, I would say. On one hand, you've got, you know, not really color graphics, which I'll get into what the overlay looks like in a second. But, you know, the colors are not what they are on the arcades. The shapes of the enemy's objects are also very simple, which is a little surprising because I feel like vector graphics can do some complicated shapes at times. But it does have some vector graphics tropes, like things blowing up in 2,000 pieces when they blow up, which I really like. And I'm also happy to report that the sound is really actually quite nice on this. There's a two-part harmony music that happens when you boot up the game. It's just a little jingle tune, but I like it quite a lot. And then as you're actually playing the game, you got like slide whistle sounds and explosion sounds. No music when you're playing, but I think it's overall pretty well done, the sound effects. So that was kind of nice. As far as what the overlay looks like, as I mentioned, it's kind of weird. It's kind of divided into three colors where you have blue at the top, yellow in the middle, and green at the bottom. But there's like a weird like stripe kind of effect, almost like it's not a hard transition, but they kind of buffer it a little bit. But that kind of means like the mountains look almost stripey at times, which I don't think I really like that much. I think that honestly would have been better if it was just hard, like thirds of the screen all in different colors without this kind of striping effect in it. There's also something else I noticed, which I tried to watch a lot of videos on this to see if this was something that actually happened or if it was just like my version or whatever. And nobody ever talked about this, but I see it in every video. And that's that there's this weird, almost like refreshing of the screen happening, which I don't understand at all because I don't think vector graphics refresh like that. But the screen definitely is flickering a little bit. And there's also a little bit of glow of all the lines. So things don't look as crisp as I'm used to seeing in vector graphics. I'm not sure if there's any real reason for that, but it was definitely noticeable, especially the flickering was kind of annoying. There's also a weird thing that I don't feel like I usually notice, and maybe this was just in the case on all older screens, but when you emulate games today, you don't notice it because we're playing on modern monitors. But, you know, like in old CRT TVs, the edges of the screen, like the screen's not perfectly flat. Usually it's a little curved, and the edges is kind of curved in just a little bit. I feel like I really noticed playing on this smaller screen that's like super vertically tall but not that wide, that the edges of the screen looked a little curved. I don't know why I noticed that so much on this, but they probably all were like that, all screens back in the day. But maybe just because it's smaller, I noticed it more on this. But just some interesting things with the graphics there. But yeah, that's pretty much all I really have to say about it. It plays like Scramble, maybe a little bit more simple. It does play pretty responsively. The frame rate feels high, but the graphics just aren't refreshing at the same rate. It's kind of weird. But you can fire multiple shots, I think at least three or four on screen at a time, plus two bombs. Gotta love that. Lots of things exploding. Usually lots of enemies on screen, which is cool. It's hard, but it's not unfair. So I think it's you know, pretty well balanced in that way. But yeah, with that being said, let me go into my ratings. I've got kind of boring ratings today. It's a 3 out of 10 for the gameplay. I think it's pretty good. Not as good as the original arcade game, I don't think, but pretty solid. Because of how good it feels to play and the fact that it kind of goes forever and goes through these different couple stages, there's a couple different enemies, I think it feels a little bit better than like an Atari 2600 game, for example. I think it would be more fun to play them than probably most home versions of Scramble, actually, but still couldn't go too high because, you know, there's not really any innovation here, for example. There's really nothing to make me want to play this version over the original arcade game. For graphics, I gave that a 3 out of 10 as well. There's some good things. I mean, vector graphics, again, it's a little hard for us to rate because we're looking at this through a raster screen. So obviously it looks better in person considering the fact that it's drawn as a vector graphic, meaning it's kind of infinitely crisp looking graphics almost. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt, but I don't think it looks that good. There's some things like the screen refreshing and the colors that almost take it away a little bit from what I think it could be. So I think it's a kind of a little bit of a mixed bag when it comes to the graphics. So I ended up giving it just a 3 out of 10 there. For sound effects, I also gave that a 3 out of 10. I love the music in the beginning. I think it sounds phenomenal, but then it doesn't continue playing when you play the game. The sound effects when you do play the game, I think, are probably a little bit higher quality than most home consoles, but they get boring after a while. It's just the same over and over and over again. So, and there's only like two or three unique sounds in the gameplay. So I couldn't go too high. I feel almost like there was potential to do more with the sounds, considering how good the music sounds when it starts up. I was like, oh man, if that had played the whole time, it would have really been something special, but it doesn't. So I thought it was okay, but not great. Another 3. For relevance, I gave it a 6 out of 10. Scramble in particular seems to be a pretty well-selling game on the Vectrex. And the Vectrex, considering it's the only vector graphics-based hardware for a personal home use like ever made, makes it very collectible and you know, something a lot of people go back and try to find. So it's definitely pretty relevant, even though Scramble itself is, you know, they're not pushing the boundaries with anything there. Overall, left me with a 3 out of 10. I think it's solid, but there are some things I think they could do better. They could do better with the sound. They could do better with the overlays. While the vector graphics themselves look pretty good, all the shapes are very simple, very boxy, or triangles. Nothing really had much detail to it. And you might think, well, aren't all vector graphics games like that? I can tell you confidently no, because the other game I reviewed today is also vector graphics, and it looks incredible. So I don't know if that was a limitation with, you know, putting it on a smaller screen or what, but it is good. Like, there are definitely things I like about it, and super unique, right? No other home console is going to look or play like this. So it has that going for it. It's just a matter of, you know, how much can they really push this console? So we will see.
Yeah. It's very interesting to see that. And also, it's cool how they got so many like actual names licensed on the Vectrex specifically. But yeah, I could see how visuals and otherwise may have left a little bit to be desired. All right, but we do have a couple more games to mention for today. For the Vectrex, we have Rip Off, which is a port of the arcade game. If you don't know that one, as a reminder, it's a sort of space war, asteroids, control style kind of game where you're defending triangles in the middle of the screen from enemies. Then we also have Star Trek The Motion Picture, which was a turret gunning space shooter kind of game. And then Space Wars, which was literally a port of Space War going way back to when I think that was originally a, you know, like 1976 vector graphics, something or other. I don't know. So bringing it back, you know, got to make sure to keep that Space Wars tradition alive.
Yeah. And before we leave the Vectrex, I do want to say, sorry, I just realized that Scramble, the game I reviewed, does have 6 levels and it ends with an enemy base kind of bombing section.
Okay.
Before it resets. I couldn't remember if it was just infinite, like, you know, played infinitely or not, but there is, I guess, an ending, but I never saw anybody get there. So must be pretty hard.
Yeah, and I think if it's the same as normal Scramble, then it loops after that 6th level anyway. So,
yeah, it does. Yeah. It does. All right, but let's kind of leave the Vectrex now. Not a game specifically, but something kind of weird, like an offshoot of it. I found this thing called the Minicade by ESI, which is a coin-operated version of the Vectrex made for bars for some reason. Like, they put it on the bar, and people go up and put a quarter in and then play a Vectrex game for a while.
Interesting.
Kind of weird.
Yeah, yeah. A little mini version of it. I guess you want to steer away from the full-size, expensive vector graphics cabinet. All right, but then we also have a game here called 3D Breakaway, a.k.a. Breakthrough, by Britmonk and Avalon Hill. Came out in November, and it is a 3D, like truly 3D breakout clone that looks pretty interesting for the TRS-80 Coco.
All right, and the next one we have here is called The Battle of Gettysburg by Soft Ride, which came out in November of 1982. It's a real-time strategy game that looked okay, although I couldn't really find a video showing how it worked exactly. It came out on the TRS-80 Coco, and I think you know this, Wes. Some of our listeners might know this, but my family is actually from Gettysburg, and my dad actually pretty much grew up on the battlefield. And so I showed him pictures of this game, which has a map that I think is supposed to be of the town of Gettysburg. Like, it shows a bunch of highways and stuff, and I was like, Dad, do you recognize, like, are they trying to make you play in, I don't know, Cemetery Ridge here or whatever?
Right.
And my dad looked at the map and he's like, I have no idea what this is. So I don't know how accurate it really is, but it was interesting.
Yeah. All right. And then we have another TRS-80 Coco game here called Poltergeist, this one by Tandy. And it was somehow a mix of Pac-Man, Frogger, and a turret gunning game. Seemed pretty interesting, okay, but not interesting enough that we ended up covering it.
And the last honorable mention here for just computer games is Blueprint by CBS Software. Came out sometime in 1982 for the Atari 8-bit, and it was a nice, like a really nice port of the Midway Zilek game that I reviewed not too long ago. Basically, you like take machine pieces out of houses to build a crazy contraption,
right, which
hits something on the top of the screen. But it was a really good port, so I wanted to mention it.
All right. And then moving back into home console territory for a bit, we've got the Intellivision with a couple games to mention for November. The first one is Pitfall by Activision, which was just a port of the popular platforming game. Pretty cool, but just ended up being pretty much the same as the original. And then we also have Stampede by Activision, which was a just okay shooting game themed around catching cattle while on a horse. And then the last Intellivision game that we had to mention here is Tron Mazatron, which was a top-down maze shooting type game where you're moving around on a circuit board. Really interesting visuals in this, but it was very strange and confusing. And despite having a boss phase, it just kind of seemed a little overly complicated and not too great. We were debating reviewing this one, but decided not to.
All right, let's move into a different console, the Arcadia 2001. I believe this console came out in 82, or released in May, and there's been like four sets of games that we've talked about.
Dang,
so yeah. They've been just pumping out the games. Starting out in this set here, we've got a couple that were all just like clones of arcade games, and obviously the arcade games are way better, but it's just interesting to see what they try to port over to this home console. It includes games like Robot Killer, which was a Berserk clone, The End, which was a clone of The End, which was an arcade game. Same thing with Astro Invader. They had one called Crazy Gobbler, which was a Pac-Man type game, and Turtles, otherwise known as Turpin, which I think, again, was a clone of the game Turtles by Konami.
All right, but then we also have Jump Bug, which was for the Bandai and Tunix versions of this console only. Again, clone of an arcade game, but in this one, the screen doesn't scroll, so it's more of just a straight-up platformer.
And then one called Combat. This is for the MPT-03 version only, and it was a dogfighting type game that seemed okay. Pretty good.
And then Monaco Grand Prix, aka 3D Raceway. This was only for the Palladium version of this console. It was a top-down racing game where the graphics were just okay.
If you guys are confused about why there's so many different versions, welcome to the club. All right, let's move on to another console now. The Bally Astrocade is still around kicking. Can you believe it, Wes?
Jeez.
We haven't talked about this in years. But apparently this is part two of two. I don't even remember the first part that we did earlier this year, but we must have. We have some must dates for some of these games, starting with Cosmic Raiders, which came out in November, and it was a Defender-type game. But the Astrocade, to be fair, it's looking pretty bad by now.
Yeah, it was one of the best, but now starting to look a little dated when we've got things like the ColecoVision around. But we do have the Incredible Wizard as well, which is a Wizard of War clone port, which always love to see Wizard of War getting some respect. And this one actually was pretty decent on this console.
I mean, to be fair, the arcade version of Wizard of War wasn't like a looker.
True, and it's been a while. Yeah, you know, it's got the black background, the maze, so it doesn't have to do too much.
Yeah. And the last one we have here is Solar Conqueror, which I believe came out in November, although I have seen dates in 83. But this is a space shooter with a space war control / momentum kind of mechanic in it. So another kind of cool one. Interesting to see some more physics-based stuff on the Astrocade. But now, Wes, we were going into arcade land, and these next two games are pretty cool. I'm really excited to hear about yours.
Yes. So my only review for the day is an arcade game, which I'm going to change the pronunciation probably every time I say it. I think it's Rogien or Rugien. It's one of them, but it's Rougien by Sanritsu. Came out in November. Let's say Rugien is what I'm going to go with.
Okay. I like it.
Just looking at the flyer, there's not too much background info, and we unfortunately couldn't find a picture of the cabinet for this one, but going by the flyer to advertise it, Rugien is the name of the space devil that shows up in this game as the final boss, which is, for reasons, a giant pair of floating lips. That's the main enemy, the main boss in this game. And then there's also this giant spaceship in the second level of this game. I'll talk about the stages in a bit. But according to the flyer, that's called the Space Train, which I guess makes sense because it's a really big spaceship, but I don't know why they couldn't just call it like something different. But that's basically all the background I have on it. So let me talk about some gameplay for Rougien. It is a Galaxian-like shooter where you can move in four different directions on the screen. So you're not totally locked to the bottom, but you are primarily on the bottom, like half of the screen, and you're always shooting upwards. This one does have a sort of central vanishing point in the top center. So when you're on the left of the screen, your bullets kind of curve a little bit to the right or angle a little to the right, and the opposite when you're on the right side of the screen. They go a little bit left towards that central point at the top of the screen. There are four different stages that you play through. In the first stage, the enemies spawn at the top in waves and fly down towards you in loop. You have a little tracker on the side of the screen that shows you like how many waves for each level that you've beat. That's pretty standard Galaxian fare. The second stage, you go to the space train, which is now a scrolling screen. Train slowly scrolling below you, and you basically just have to survive as various fighters and missiles come at you that you can shoot. But a lot of the times you just have to dodge. In the third stage, you enter a corridor at the top of the space train. And this is one of the reasons that we really wanted to take a look at this game, because this changes the perspective totally. I should mention there was like a bit of an angle in the first stage. And then the second stage, your spaceship turns to like just top down. But then this third stage is now like a behind the camera corridor trench scene from Star Wars almost. Reminds me almost like of a racing game like Turbo, the kind of perspective that it has. But it's right behind your ship, a little Zaxxon-y as well, because you can still use your arrows to move, but now you're moving left, right, up, and down in this vertical corridor space you're in. The corridor is straightaways, and then every now and then turns different directions, and you just fly through there, dodge or kill all the enemies that come at you until you eventually escape the tunnel. Then in the final stage, you fight Rugian, the floating lips, as they spawn enemies to shoot you in kind of a Galaxian manner. After you dodge or kill a bunch of the enemies that they spawn and throw at you, they then have this final section where they're just shooting two fireballs below them. And I don't believe you can blow up the fireballs. It's just like you have to sneak a shot in either to the side or in the center to hit the lips instead of the fireball. And then I think it only takes like one hit and that's gone. I was just spamming and eventually it died. So to be honest, I don't know exactly what killed it. And when you die, it goes from like these smirking closed lips to like a open mouth, aghast sort of expression, which is pretty great. But after that, you just loop, keep going through it again. Unfortunately, on the flyer, there was a section where like the mothership, or there is a mothership with the lips at the center of it. Unless that's after like three cycles of repeats or something, I don't think it's in the game. I didn't see any videos of it in the game, and I never got that far, which is a little sad because the lips are cool, but it would be nice to see him get an upgrade, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But that's the basic gameplay. It's always like sort of a bottom-to-top shooter, Galaxian style, but the perspective changes, and you've got the cool tunnel stage, so there's a lot of interesting stuff going on here. And I haven't talked at all about what it looks like. So let me get into my ratings now and talk about the graphics, because this one looks pretty great. I gave it a 3.75 out of 10. It's got tons of fun visuals and bright colors. Your ship just looks like a classic space shuttle. There's even a little like intro cinematic at the beginning where it launches with all the rockets that a classic space shuttle has, which is pretty cool. And you get to see the sprite of this space shuttle from a lot of different angles. Like I was saying, you're like kind of tilted back a little bit, so you get to see the engine or the nose is tilted forward a little bit in the first stage, and then it's straight top down in the second stage. Third stage, you're looking behind it like chase cam, so you get all these fun different perspectives of it, and you really get a good feel for what the ship looks like, which is nice. On the first stage and the open space stage, which the fourth is also an open space, they're a little plain. It's mainly a black background with white stars, but the stars do move around in the background, which is interesting. All of the enemies, I didn't really mention, but since there's that central vanishing point at the top of the screen, they also kind of do the scaling thing that we've seen before, where they're really tiny and look really far away, but then as they move down the screen, they become bigger and easier to hit because they're closer to you. The enemies also have lots of interesting shapes, and they're all bright colored, multicolored sprites, which is great. And I like your shots. They're either like big missiles or fireballs, but they look good. They're not just a typical like little line. The space train stage looks really good too, with missiles coming out of the ship and all the details on the ship as you're flying over it. It reminds me of like some of the like Robotech slowly scrolling shooters that we'll get in like the 90s. My favorite section though is definitely the tunnel trench sequence that you fly through. It's just super cool. it turns occasionally and it flies by to make it feel like you're going super fast through this trench. And one of my favorite parts about this visually is that if you fly too close to the bottom or the sides of the screen, it actually makes a noise and shows like flames coming out of wherever you're making contact with the tunnel, like you're skidding against it. It's just super cool. Like you're kicking up sparks when your ship hits the bottom. I didn't ever test to see if you sit on the bottom long enough that eventually you'll explode, but it was enough seeing those sparks and hearing the noise to be like, ooh, I probably shouldn't be doing that for too long. But that just looked really great. And the perspective on your ship, the perspective of your ship in this section just looks awesome from like behind getting these CDA thrusters. I will say though that one of the main detractors of the graphics for me is that the enemies in this stage look really weird. They don't have the quite the same angled perspective. It looks like they're just coming at you like classic Galaxian characters, which doesn't make a lot of sense in the perspective of the tunnel. But other than that, you know, they're still pretty easy to figure out how to shoot them and make your way through. And of course, you've got the floating lips, which are just weird as heck, but they're a lot of fun. They even have a little animation when you get a game over where the lips float across the screen laughing at you. It's so strange, but I always love strange stuff in these games. Moving on to sounds now, I gave this a 3 out of 10. Most of the sounds in the game are pretty standard for a Galaxian-type game. They're decent, but nothing too crazy. But there is some synthesized speech in this. At the start of each game, the lips float across the screen and say something very hard to discern, but I think it's them saying Rugen or Rugen. And then there's the game over laughing that I just talked about, which is like synthesized and really deep. It's funny because it's such a short track that it actually like hard loops twice. So you just go, ha ha, and then ha ha. And like, it's silly the way it does it, but it sounds pretty good. But unfortunately, there's no music in the game except for a really simple tune during the boss fight with the lips. So I couldn't go too crazy with the sound rating. Gameplay, though, I did enjoy this a decent bit. I gave it a 3.25 out of 10. Most of the stages in Rugen feel pretty familiar, but they all play pretty well. My main complaint is just that everything had that perspective of the central vanishing point, so the way your shots angled just felt weird, like when I was missing stuff when I shouldn't have been some of the time. But I did really like the space train scrolling stage, really loved the tunnel stage. It all controlled a bit strange in the tunnel stage with the enemies not scaling right, but it felt really novel for this genre to have that type of stage mixed in there. I don't know if I could play it over and over and over again, but having, you know, 3 pretty distinct levels out of the 4 was really nice. It gave us a nice variety. For relevance, there was not much information on this at all, so I only gave it a 4 out of 10. But I do appreciate the combination of different perspectives, visual perspectives in one game. We've seen some of that before, but I feel like this took it to a new level, so I really hope we see more of that. Overall, that left me with a 3.25 out of 10 for Rugen. It is a solid Galaxian game with some weird floating lips in space as the main enemy, but more importantly, a trench sequence that looked great. I think it's maybe lacking in the sounds department and the gameplay could be a little bit better, but it had fun synthesized speech. It had a unique character to it that helped differentiate it from the rest of the pack. So overall, I thought it was a really cool one. Definitely worth taking a look at.
All right. Nice, man.
Yeah.
Definitely one that I checked out as well and quite enjoyed.
Yeah. I mean, seeing those lips, you got to pay attention to it. You're like, what the heck's going on here?
I definitely think we could consider that one to be a bit of a hidden gem. There's not that much info on it, like you mentioned, but definitely a cool one. Senritsu doing it again. But let's move on from that. We've got another arcade game, an honorable mention here, Super Zaxxon. Now, Zaxxon might be one of my favorite games of the year that we did right at the beginning of the year. And already less than a year later, Sega is coming back with Super Zaxxon. But honestly, feels pretty much exactly the same as the original Zaxxon. Yeah. You know, I'm sure Zaxxon fanatics will know the difference really quickly. But to us, it seemed like a very minor improvement. So decided to skip this one. And instead, my second review of the day, and our last one for today, is called Tac Scan, also by Sega. This also came out in November of 1982, and it's another vector graphics game. So I had a lot of vector graphics games today.
Nice.
But this one's quite a bit different from the Vectrex. It's like on arcade hardware, first of all, but also really cool. Like a really cool game. Very different from what I'm used to playing, either just like in vector graphics games or just like Galaxian type games in general, because this is another kind of Galaxian type game. We've got, in this case, multiple ships on the bottom of the screen and firing up at the top of the enemies, just like in almost all other Galaxian or Space Invaders type games. But this one has some unique mechanics in it and a couple different stages. So let me do my best to explain. The game's quite a bit different because you don't have one ship on the bottom. You have like seven ships on the bottom. And when you fire with all seven ships at the same time. So seven bullets on screen at once, which is an awesome feeling. And believe me, when you hit like a group of enemies with those seven shots and they break apart into 1,000 pieces like vector graphics games always do, feels incredible. But because if you can imagine, like you've got seven ships at the bottom, they are pretty small in this game. They have a Millennium Falcon type profile to them. But if you can imagine, there's seven of those on the bottom of the screen. They're kind of organized a little bit in like a V shape, but they still make up a good portion of the bottom of the screen. It would be hard to like dodge shots considering where your ships take up is like half the screen, right? It doesn't leave you a lot of room to maneuver. So how they get around this is that the screen actually scrolls sideways as well. Like it's constantly scrolling kind of down at you, but and not in a way that's like physics-based, it's more just like aesthetic. But if you can imagine, when like I turn right and left, it's not like usual Galaxian where your ship on the bottom goes right and left. Like it feels like the whole camera shifts to the right and left, and I can shift off enemy ships and shots completely off the screen, and it won't wrap, right? So you just kind of dodge things. So that's kind of how they get around the fact that you have such a big profile at the bottom of the screen. You can just like completely go sideways, almost, it feels like, and everything on the screen will kind of shift to that opposite direction, which is a pretty cool thing. Now an enemy ship kind of gets shifted off a direction, it'll find its way back on screen, so you do have to kill a bunch of stuff to go in advanced stages. But it definitely feels quite a bit different from a normal Galaxian type game, and the camera's moving a lot. Something I really appreciate, even in the very first stage that you can notice, is that the background stars have a parallax scrolling effect. So some of the stars in the background move at a different speed than other stars. And it really makes you feel like as you move, you can see the stars in the background kind of shift places in ways that feel a little bit more realistic and is really, really cool. The enemy ships also can have a perspective to them. I don't think it's that noticeable in the first stage, but in the other stages, it's even more noticeable. But yeah, as you can imagine, you've got this kind of Galaxian style stage. If you defeat all the enemies in that, you move on to stage two. In stage two, a really cool animation happens where the ships on the bottom of the screen that you were controlling kind of move up towards the camera, so they get bigger, and then they kind of flip 90 degrees horizontal, and now you're in the behind the shoulder type camera view that Rugian had as well. But this time in vector graphics. And this is really cool as well. It kind of plays similar to the first stage, but that perspective that the enemies have is way more noticeable. The way the stars move kind of make you feel like you're kind of in a tunnel where the stars almost have like a bit of a circular effect to them. And they still have the parallax scrolling, which is really cool. I don't know. It feels completely different because there's a vanishing point now. Your seven shots kind of clump together towards the horizon line, which is a bit different. But yeah, I don't know. It just feels quite a bit different and a really cool camera perspective change for stage two. And then for stage three, you go into this warp hole section. It's still the same camera as stage two, but essentially you're traveling down a warp hole. And the way this one plays out is that all of your ships kind of move to the center of the screen and a triangle pops up in the center of the screen. And you just have to kind of make sure your ships are in the triangle at all times. If they're not, they'll get destroyed from hitting the edge of the warp tunnel. And the warp tunnel does kind of curve and change and go up and down and stuff. So you basically just need to try to keep your ships in the center of the screen and then you'll be fine. That's your main stages. After you do the warp tunnel, you go back to stage one and they just loop forever. But there are some other mechanics here to talk about for sure. I mean, for one thing, as I mentioned, you've got like seven ships. So your seven ships can get hit independently. So you can lose just one ship, right? In one location. As a default, I think you start the game with like six backup ships. And at any time you have a button to kind of replenish your ships. In fact, you can kind of use your controller to, if you have multiple ships missing, you can kind of pick what position they come back in on. I don't really know why it would make much of a difference, but maybe, you know, if you're advanced, it would. But it's pretty cool that you can kind of lose ships one at a time and then replenish them one at a time. I think you gain extra ships. You might be able to gain them from points, but you can definitely also, at the ends of some stages, find other friendly ships just floating in space. And if you can position your six ships in such a way where one of the slots of a ship that's missing from your formation goes over top the friendly ship, then they will join the formation. So you kind suck them into your formation, I guess, which is a really, really cool mechanic. And as I mentioned before, shooting like seven shots at a time, really cool. There is some minor difficulties with the ships and with the gameplay. For one thing, there are some formations, like in the later stages, the formation shape changes. Like I said, in the beginning, it's more or less a triangle kind of shape. I have seen other stages where it's more like a straight line, which would not really be that helpful. But some other kind of weird things is that because when you move sideways, the whole screen kind of turns sideways, your like shot selection kind of feels like you shoot straight up and down and then at 45 degree angles to the left and right, and that's it. So it's not like a normal Galaxian type game where you can kind of hit any pixel on the screen. It kind of feels like there's only a couple zones that the enemies have to be in order to hit them. It also kind of means a lot of times to hit the enemies, you have to move in the path of their shots. So a little weird there. There's also a weird shooting mechanic, and I'm not totally certain about this. In the emulation that I played, and I've seen a lot of videos, I was trying to confirm this as well, but in the emulation I played, as soon as you fire a second shot, your first shot disappears, which is very annoying because that means you can't really spam. And if you want to really hit anything up at the top of the screen, you're firing pretty slowly, which I didn't really enjoy that much. But I have seen at least one video online where they were firing multiple shots and every shot made it to the end of the screen. I don't know why that was the case. My guess is maybe it's a setting that is set on the actual cabinet, but I don't know for sure. But that would have definitely made it better because I didn't really like the fact that you can only have one bullet on screen at a time. Even though it was a group of like seven shots, it just meant that you couldn't really fire that fast, and it's fun to fire fast. But yeah, I think that's pretty much all you need to know about it. Let me get into my ratings now. For the gameplay, I give the gameplay a 4 out of 10. I thought it was quite good. You've got three very different stages that feel very different with some cool transitions between them. You've got, you know, you're shooting seven shots at a time. And believe me, there are times when there's like four enemies on screen and they're lined up in such a way where you destroy them all in one shot and they burst into 1,000 pieces. It's so satisfying. Like, I love that. So I thought the gameplay was quite good. It is a little weird in how it controls for sure, but the overall experience was still quite fun. And so I enjoyed playing this one a lot. It was fun that you could kind of reclaim lost ships, right? that you could rebuild your formation and your squadron with your extra lives. And it was just fun to like fire 7 shots at a time. I don't know. It's something we don't usually do very much. So definitely thought that the game played well. For graphics, I also thought that looked pretty good too. I gave that a 4 out of 10 as well. It's color vector graphics, like true color vector graphics. And the ships and the shapes are not nearly as simple as like on the Vectrex. Like your 6 ships, not only do they sometimes have perspective and different sizes, even within the formation to kind of give you a bit of a perspective, but like they look good. They have some detail on them. They're not like crazy detailed, but it's enough where it feels pretty unique. And you can definitely tell there's a bit of a Millennium Falcon kind of shape to them and detail to them. The enemy spaceships look very different, but they're surprisingly very colorful. Maybe their shapes aren't the most unique, but like I found them to be really, really colorful. And I love the background, man, with the parallax scrolling on the stars. They look so good. We need to have more games that do that effect because it's just an awesome effect. And as I mentioned, the ships blowing up is one of my favorite parts. They literally blow up into like pixel sized chunks. And it's so good. And there's cool, like the warp tunnel is cool and different. Your laser shots are actually pretty cool. They're kind of like these rainbow, like more long lasery type shots. Like it's not a bullet. It's more of like a long skinny laser. I thought that was cool. There's also a special enemy that shows up. It's more like a flying saucer. That's a little bit different. He'll try to like really snipe you from close range, but it was really cool. I thought overall the game looks just phenomenal. Maybe one of the better vector graphics games I ever played. So really good with that. For sound effects, they're pretty good as well. I gave it a 3.75 out of 10. Not quite as good as the other ones, but still pretty solid. I think my favorite part about the sound effects is actually the explosion sounds. Because when, like I mentioned, things blow up into 1,000 pieces, there's a really nice, like, kind of crunchy sound to it, which I feel like is not usual in arcade games. I don't hear, like, it's more like tactile of a sound.
Right.
I don't know why that would be the case, but I just thought it sounded really, really cool and unique and different. Otherwise, you've got pretty standard Galaxian-style sound effects all throughout. I can't remember if there's music or not. I don't think there's any music. In this one, there might be a little bit of music when you start the level and start playing, but I don't think there's any music in the stage. But you got nice like ship engine noises and slide whistle sounds. But my favorite is just the impactful sound effects when you shot something. It just made those explosions that much better. So I quite like the sound. For relevance, I gave that a 6.5 out of 10. It sold pretty well. I read it was like in the top 25 of the year for arcade games. So it's not like one of the top ones, but you know, this is pretty well known. So I gave it some relevance, and it's the first time I've ever seen 6 user-controlled ships on screen. So that was cool. Overall, I gave it a 4 out of 10. It's very good. I think it's pretty solid across all of its you know, different ratings here, sound, graphics, and gameplay. And I really enjoyed playing it, man. It was fun. It was fast paced.
Yeah. Oh, it looks super cool. I mean, just having that many ships, you know, you're controlling a whole squadron, it feels like, and going through the warp tunnel with them and the perspective change. Yeah, we need more of that, like behind the car or whatever, the chase cam, like perspective shooting games, because both Rushian and Taxcan, it's pretty sweet.
Also, I want to quickly mention, when I played this in an emulator myself, I thought it looked way better than pretty much any YouTube video I had seen of it. I don't know why that would be. Maybe it's just because the screen was bigger. But I thought it looked really good when you play it yourself. So, and for a vector graphics game, that probably makes some sense. So,
yeah,
I really recommend TaxScan. It's a cool one.
Awesome. Very cool.
All right. With that being said, though, Wes, we are going to end it for today. We did a brand new console, the Vectrex. This is a big one, one that we're going to keep our eye on for sure. One that we've been looking forward to all year because it's the only Vector Graphics home console I think ever made. So
oh, yeah.
We had to check that one out. I checked out Scramble for it. And although I would have preferred a unique original game, they still did it pretty well. And while I had some like nitpicks about it, overall it was good and it played really well and was fast paced and ran pretty well. So got to give them some credit there, especially considering they built that in like a month or two after release, you know. So
yeah,
lots of games to come out even just in the end of the year here. But then we covered some other honorable mentions from the Intellivision, the Arcadia 2001, and the Astrocade, before finally going into Rugien. Rugien. By Sanritsu, which is a really cool Galaxian-style game. Maybe a bit of a hidden gem. I don't think many people probably know that one.
Yeah.
But it had a lips boss, so you gotta check that out. I mean, but then it also had some cool camera stuff. And TaxGan also had some cool camera stuff, but no lips. But it did have some vector graphics. Color vector graphics too, which were really good.
Yeah.
So a pretty nice selection of games there, Wes. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Tons of cool stuff. Tons of vector graphics featured. I love that we're still seeing it when we can. And if you have enjoyed listening to this episode and everything that we do, make sure to check out our website because we've got tons of great information there. Make sure to follow us on X where we post announcements about our episodes. And if you have any questions, feel free to send us an email.
And with that, we'll catch you next time.
See you all next time.